The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, I'm Evan Unger, and I guess I consider myself a world-class fixer of the mess that is meetings, and you're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Andy Claff, and joining me today, my colleague, Mark Story. Welcome.
Thanks, Andy.
This is a hat trick for you.
Yep, third time around.
Think we'll get it right this time?
Nope.
Okay, we'll have you back for a fourth. You were here at the tail end of 2021. We did an Effective Leadership Principles podcast, and then we followed it up. Maybe a month later, Autonomy with Alignment. Really two wonderful shows, and you can find them in our archives. And we're excited to have our guest here, Evan Unger, world-class fixer for the mess that are meetings. Welcome, sir.
It is great to be here, Andy. Thank you for having me.
So, Mark, you introduced us to Evan. I'm curious, how did you two cross paths? When, where, how?
I was introduced to Evan and what Evan does. I think it was around 2009, something like that, when I worked for Colorado Workers' Compensation Insurance Company, Pinnacle. And I think the Pinnacle has an interesting culture. But one of the things I learned very quickly when I got there as a scrum master is that the way I was running meetings was entirely unacceptable. They have a very strong culture around having effective meetings. And I started arranging meetings, and people would, it bordered on anger when I came in with a traditional agenda. They could not understand what it was I was trying to do. And so I think it was about 6 weeks into my employment there where my boss said, "Hey, Mark, you need to go to this workshop." And so that's, It wasn't because I was doing it badly per se. It was because I was doing it the way I was taught, which
right.
I think most people learn how to, I don't even want to say lead a meeting, how to organize a meeting in a very ineffective way where it's always, hey, let's get together and talk about some stuff. I don't want to get together and talk about stuff anymore. I want to get things done. And so I think that's when I went through what was then called the Facilitative Leadership Workshop. That was, eye-opening for me, and honestly, it was a career trajectory changing kind of event for me.
Yeah, it went downhill from there, I guess, huh?
Okay, yeah, apparently so.
So we're going to fact check here on the spot, Evan. Can you correlate Mark's story, that, you know, collaborate? Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times we were teaching people how to facilitate as a broader transformation and change initiative. So Pinnacle was going through a vision and values process that our consulting firm was working with. And generally, what we would do is offer facilitation training as part of the broader cultural initiative. So I ran the program a ton with Pinnacle over the years, because it's a very practical skill set. You know, if we're going to, you know, lead change, we need to know how to facilitate complex meetings. And so, Mark, yeah, I think it was about either 2009, 2010, Mark.
Somewhere in there.
If I'm trying to recall. And we probably ran the program for Pinnacle, I don't remember, 10, you know, times, maybe more. And with really, because I think, Mark, it's interesting, we learned watching meetings from the senior people in the organization, and awful, they're just horrible at it. I mean, they just model what misery looks like. And then we're like, oh, I guess that's what a meeting looks like. The leader talks and everyone just listens.
Or pretends to listen.
I think frequently the more senior people are, the worse their meetings are.
Oh, without question.
Yeah. We'll get into power dynamics. But before we do, Evan, how did you get into this business? Tell us a little bit about your backstory. and your journey?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say journey, because I used to do a lot of team buildings, and one of the exercises we did was called journey lines, which I learned from my mentor, because a lot of mentors that I had back when I was in Merck came out of the G tradition of workout and the change acceleration process when Jack Welch was the big thing.
Yeah.
And so you and I, Andy, are about the same age. And so when I was at Merck, I went through a couple of promotions where they promoted me into a role I really wasn't competent for, the director of change leadership and development. And as part of that, we designed a process to teach very senior people how to facilitate complex meetings around a procurement reengineering project. So that's kind of where I got my start, was at Merck. Back then, you remember Michael Hammer was sort of one of the pundits who was doing, you know, process reengineering work. I think dead or alive, I think he's dead. I'm trying to remember at this point, because you and I, Andy, are getting on there. I'm not even sure we're middle-aged at this point. I'm 59. I think I saw yesterday middle age ends at 60. So I got another year left. Mark's got a few more.
My favorite definition is old is 10 years older than you are today. That's what I'm going for.
Exactly. But when we get together with our friends from way back when, we feel like we're 21 still. But when I'm on the pickleball court right now, I feel it, right? I'm sure I've got a couple of hip replacements on the way here soon. Yeah. And so that's where I really got exposed to it, was when I was at Merck. And, you know, as I said, I had a lot of really good people who I was able to learn from when I was the director of change, fancy title for, you know, really doing internal cultural transformation work at Merck.
So the theme for today's show, and we're not quite sure what the title is going to be. We're bouncing around some things. Mark, you said your favorites was the first draft, your meetings suck. Now what?
Yeah.
That would be good clickbait. Meetings, the good, the bad, the ugly. Evan, in preparing for this show, you offered up, so we meet again. Anyway, let's talk about what do we mean by meetings? And then we'll dive into some data. Who wants to share a definition, a working definition of what the heck is a meeting anyway?
I mean, Mark, I'd be interested in your take, because you're, you know, I've been inside organizations more recently than I have, right? I left Merck in 95 and then was with a big healthcare company through 96. But you've been sitting in inside organizational meetings more recently than me. So how would you think about it?
Well, I think there's both what they are and what they should be. And I think largely what they are is a bunch of people getting together and talking about some generally poorly defined subject. Whether or not they do anything, whether they make any decisions or do any planning or any of those things is kind of hit and miss. But what meetings should be is a very targeted event where the right people are in the room and they're there for a specific purpose and they know what that purpose is and they know how they're going to achieve that goal.
Love it. Evan, what, if anything, would you add?
Yeah, I mean, there's different types of meetings, right? There are meetings that are informational meetings where there's some expert presenting information. A lot of those should be killed because you probably can use an email to send the deck around. There are status update meetings where, you know, basically we're updating people what's happening in the department or the project. But the types of meetings that Mark's getting at is what we call a collaborative problem solving decision making meeting. We're trying to make a decision. Maybe we're trying to figure out how to allocate capital, right? Or decide what's going to be, you know, on the dashboard or something. But we're getting a group together to try to get them to achieve something, right, collaboratively. And I see so many meetings where the implicit objective is discuss. That's it. Discuss. To what end? Right? To just entertain each other. And, you know, that's the key is the group, to Mark's point, crystal clear why they're there, and most of the time they're not. And are they clear what they're trying to do? And it discuss to what end? Make a decision, build a list of recommendations, figure out how we're going to design a new process. So a meeting's, I think, anytime you get more than two people together with some sort of objective or goal to achieve collectively.
Got it. So listeners, challenge. You can look at your calendar if you want to. ballpark, what percentage of your total working time is spent in meetings? 10, 20, 90, 100? And then what proportion of those are good, productive, and useful? And we want to explore that bold hypothesis of, what if our businesses, our teams eliminated those meaningless or unproductive meetings, replaced with something else? What would that look like?
Andy, maybe another addition to that, I frequently ask this question of people who I'm coaching, which is, when you look at that calendar, I ask people to go through their meetings and say, what would happen if I didn't go to that meeting? And the answer of absolutely nothing is shockingly frequent.
Why do we put up with this? And so I want to tap into both of your data banks here. Is this a new problem, or has it just been around for decades upon decades and we just tolerate it? Thoughts?
From my perspective, it's been decades and decades. I've been, teaching people complex collaborative facilitation for almost 30 years. And I've asked two questions to clients. The first one is, how many meetings in your organization? Of course, that depends on the size of the organization. But a big global client with 70,000 people, I used to work for Merck, they could have 200,000 meetings in a day. The second question I always ask them is, what's the average effectiveness of the meetings? And in 29 years of doing this, I've never heard a client say 80%. Rarely. I'm probably on one hand where it's 70%. I can't tell you how many times people say 50% or lower. And I always say, let's do the math. Okay, you're spending 100,000, you're running 100,000 meetings in a day. You're running them, we'll give you 70%. And rarely did they say that. That's a C minus. Think about the massive loss to an organization's effectiveness. I don't know why people tolerate. Part of it, I think, is political, right? Senior people hold meetings and it's performative to some degree. And we go because we feel politically we have to go. And Mark's right. Why should we go to a meeting if the leader can't tell us why we're here, what we're doing, what my role is? But we go. It's been around for decades.
Huge impact on a couple of key measurable outcomes. Productivity, you mentioned one, right? Yep. Employee engagement.
Yeah.
You shared with me, Evan, an article from The Atlantic. I think it was last year.
It was in December, I think it came out.
So what was there data there? Was there some correlation between just the sheer number of meetings and employee engagement? Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember the specific data, but obviously someone did a survey and they directly tied employee happiness to the number of miserable meetings we're forced to sit through. And when organizations have cut back on meetings, right, your happiness goes up. I mean, and it's, think about it, engagement is like, if we're not feeling good, there's no way the results we seek are going to be what we need. And we just are forced to endure misery. Now, look, I've done a lot of meditation. I wouldn't say I'm a Buddhist, but what's the first noble truth? Life is suffering. I think at the meeting level, that's where the suffering starts in an organization, is in meetings.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if 90% of employees at any given company, if you said, what's the worst part of your day? Yeah. They would say meetings or crappy meetings.
Yeah, I think it has a huge impact, not just happiness, but joy, engagement. And how many meetings these days are truly full of engagement? I'm curious, there's also the thought that we have to get together to be productive. I wonder if that's true. Has anybody looked at meeting-free days? That always comes up, right? I don't meet on Wednesdays, or I only meet on Wednesdays. Is there data out there on the impact of fewer meetings and overall business productivity?
I think there is. I don't know off the top of my head, but I've seen a lot of things that say there are a lot of organizations who are going even to 3-day meeting-free days, right? And there, it has an impact on productivity because people now need to think about, with the time we're together, we want to make sure we make it useful. So off the top of my head, I don't know the data, but I know it is there, right? Because I've read articles about it. And I think the pandemic had a pretty big impact on meetings. People started having, I think I saw some data, maybe 10% more meetings. And a lot of that, I think, was performative because we were in our homes And people were like, well, I got to show I'm doing something. So they were putting meetings on the calendar. And it was a lot of times just to give some sense, we were doing something sitting here in our homes at our desk. And some meetings I know have gone up during the pandemic significantly.
So I want to circle back on why we tolerate this, right? We're otherwise intelligent people making unintelligent choices. You mentioned performance, politics. I'm curious, what are other reasons that people are afraid or reluctant to say no to that next meeting invite? This is a toss-up, either one of you.
Mark, what are your thoughts on that?
I think there are a couple of things, and fear of missing out is probably pretty close to the top of the list. But I think a lot of people just feel an obligation when they receive a meeting invite, especially if it's from someone who is senior to them in the organization, that they're obligated to go. And I don't mean if it's their boss, I just mean anybody who is senior to their particular role, they feel an obligation to go.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And when I run workshops, I tell people, look, if the leader can't tell you why they're having the meeting, what they're trying to get done, what your role is there, and they obviously need some sort of agenda, why are you going? And I think we go because the culture is, you know, we need FaceTime. We have to be there. And so it's just a habit that needs to be broken if we really want to have productive organizations. So many meetings, I think, should be killed, just literally taken off the books. And when, interesting, going back to where I learned GE Workout, I think they called it, when they did workouts, in many ways it was bureaucracy busting, but they had I think it was called the ramp matrix. And when they brought people together, they were like, can we eliminate reports, approval processes, meetings, metrics? And the P was processes. Because there's so many things that just get generated and then they become standing things. You know, we're going to have these reports. We're going to keep measuring this. We're going to have these meetings that could be killed. But the bureaucracy just keeps them flowing. And that really is the starting point. It's like, what can we kill? Meetings, reporting, unnecessary approval. And that was what I thought was interesting about what Jack Welch was doing back when you and I were coming into our organizational life, Andy.
It takes a great deal of psychological safety to go up and say, why are we having this meeting? What's my role? I mean, that can be scary. What about working from the other direction? As a leadership coach, how do we talk and make it clear to leaders that it's in their best interest to get rid of crappy meetings? What's the impact on them? Their reputation.
I think reputation's a great word, right? Because if I'm a leader, right, and I'm running, let's still give you 70%, but I promise, Mark, you've probably seen it's 30%. You know, and I'm taking people's time and wasting it, right? That's where my reputation as a leader is being developed. Right? They don't see me when I'm off coming up and designing a spreadsheet or doing something on my own. They see me when I take their time. And so really, a meeting is a moment of truth. It is a moment where our leadership reputation is being sealed. Mm. And people don't hate meetings. They really don't hate meetings. They hate wasting their time. And so many meetings are just a complete waste of time. And so in many ways, senior people, they haven't been trained in this. They've been trained, you know, every senior person is trained on presentation skills, executive presence. And that's important. I'm not minimizing that from a communication standpoint. Most of them, or rarely, are they trained in how to get groups to collaborate to try to actually get results. So a lot of meetings are presentations. And then the question is, why do I have to go there to a presentation? Send me the deck, right? I can read. If we're going to bring people together, there should be a reason to get them to have diverse stakeholders to do something. But it can't just be presenter updates. And that's the thing. So many meetings are just one way and they're a waste of time.
Yeah. Before we get into how to have better meetings, you mentioned a couple of meeting alternatives. Should have been an email is the classic. What else is in your either of your toolboxes for, we're going to cancel these meetings and here's the alternative to accomplish the same thing? What else you have?
Mark, you probably have more experience than this because I'm a specialist. In some ways, I'm a hammer, you know, looking for nails. I'm really good at this. It's a slick hammer. and it's a great hammer. And at the same time, you know, Mark, you may have more experience around other options for meetings beyond email. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, the one that comes immediately to mind has to do with any sort of status update on anything that looks like a project. And I think there are, you know, the tools that are used now are pretty effective in reporting. And, you know, I've seen so many times where a senior VP or a VP wants to get together to have a status meeting and talk about things that are readily available through self-service. And that's one of those, and you know, just as a coach, this is one of those I get in these conversations with the people who prepare that data and the people who consume that data. When the people who prepare the data say, hey, I get all this stuff ready so that I don't have to have a status meeting. And then the person who's supposed to consume it refuses to, and we go to a dumb meeting to talk about what's already there. So I think a lot of stuff like that those sorts of meetings could be cut off almost immediately. And that would not only free up the time and the context switching that goes into them, but it would make people feel about the work that they're putting in anyway.
Yeah, that's huge. That context switch, that planned interruption in your day that you know is coming.
Yep.
So let's switch gears and talk about what high performance meetings and how to have them. And share some resources. So we've talked about good meetings, making sure that people don't just, it's not activity theater, don't just get stuff done, but get the right stuff done, the right time with the right people. I'm trying to think of some of my favorite books from the past about meetings. I'm curious what you've got. One of the early ones was Lencioni's Death by Meeting. Yeah. That was a great fable. What else do you have out there?
Well, it's interesting. Lencioni, we always bring him up. One of his more recent books, The Advantage, it talks about really what do we have as an organization as a true differentiator is the health of the organization. And he also talks about the centrality of meetings to the health of the organization, because meetings are important, certain types of meetings. If we're going to use them, they better be well run, because if we're just running meetings to run meetings, it's toxic. It drains the organization. And so I've always loved Lencioni's work because it's just so simple to access, right? And he, you know, he works at the C-team level, and we've gone in after a client where he's working at the C-team level, working a level or two down, teaching people how to run, you know, high stakes meeting. But the honest truth is I'm not that versed in the literature. Like, I'm not an agile person. You all are. I train tons of the agile scrum, project managers, because they have to facilitate, but I am not that on top of some of the, you know, tech, the Jira, Asana, you know, Slack. I hear all these terms, but I don't really know how they help people.
I think it's better that way for you, Evans. You know, don't go there. Don't go into that room. It's scary.
I'm too old to learn that stuff.
Mark, you got any favorite titles that come to mind?
No, I'm far less literate when it comes to, so, but just put my reading about how to lead a meeting ended in about 2010. So as soon as I had Evan's workbook, that's my reference. And if I need some new tool or technique, I have the Intergoogle to help me out. So
awesome.
And Mark, I can't remember when we ran this. Were we still using three ring binders back then, or have we gone to corkscrew binders? Because now we're doing it electronically. But
I think I have one of each, actually. Like I said, right. I've done the course twice.
Yeah, by the time we got to Comcast, I think we had gotten to the corkscrew spiral binders. And but I mean, I talked to people who took the course, you know, 20 years ago, and they hold up that three ring binder. Frankly, we do videotaping. They hold up the VHS tape. You know, I go back far enough, we were taping people on VHS, and now these kids have no idea what a VCR is. But, you know, it goes back that far.
Get off my lawn. All right. So you have some wonderful ideas, whether they're in binders, spiral bound, or online, on what it takes to have a well-run meeting. And I suspect the missing sauce is facilitation.
Yeah. Yeah, and I always work with people. I have them think, there's so many different books we've all read on leadership. One of the simplest ways to think about leadership is simply on a continuum, where on the one extreme, you could be the expert, right? You could be the person who knows the most about the system you're designing, and you bring a group together as the expert. And as the expert, you're deciding for the group and presenting, right? That's presentation skills. The other side of the extreme is what we call process experts, right? Where even if you have expertise, you know how to bring the right people together. You have skills in collaboration, and you stay completely neutral on what the system looks like, right? Because you trust the group has the expertise. And so really, to me, the art of leadership is knowing how to get a group to come together, get alignment around why they're doing things, what they're doing. You bring the process expertise to help bridge the expertise of the group to help them achieve an objective. And that is the art of leadership, is just pure process facilitation. And that's what I've always done, is work in neutral mode, knowing when people go back in the real world, they're in the middle of the continuum. They're going to make decisions for teams. If you can get a group of team to make a decision, never tell them what you think, that is the art. As long as it's the best decision and they buy in, that is the art. And you can do it. You can be a great leader and never tell people what to think or do.
Well, there's David Marquet's work where he talks about he's only making one decision as the leader. And he puts it in the context of a nuclear attack submarine, and his is fire. Everything else is disseminated to the crew with mission clarity and confirmation of competency. So it makes a lot of sense. But in today's world, when we talked a little bit about the leader being in the room, there's that power dynamic in a meeting. The danger of both formal positional in the org chart hierarchy, informal relationship influence. I'm curious how your model and the beautiful hammer that you have begins to tackle some of those dynamics.
Well, to me, we pick up with the assumption you have a reason to bring people together, right? We're not on the side of which meeting should be killed, which shouldn't. And so it starts with, are you clear why you're here, what you're doing, right? Can you design a good process? But I think what you're getting at, Andy, I think someone at Microsoft, they called it the HIPPO model of decision-making, right? The highest, paid person's opinion. It's the senior person. And everyone has diversity initiatives going on, right? And they're important, right? DEI initiatives are important, but I like to think about diversity a little more broadly, in addition to the traditional categories of diversity, gender, race. There's cognitive diversity, right? There's leadership style diversity. There's introverts, there's extroverts, there's junior people, senior people on global teams. There's different cultures. And so what we need to know how to do is hold space, so we don't let the HIPPO impose his or her will on the group, because it could be that very junior person who might be a person of color, right? Who's maybe dialing in from Japan in a culture where they want to perhaps save face. Their boss is on the line, who has exactly the expertise to help the group make a better decision, but it is very hard to get them to weigh in. And so what we're trying to teach people is the art of holding space, so every voice gets to engage around the problem, because it's sometimes the junior people closest to the work that could help the seniors, the HIPPO people, learn what really is happening, and they never get engaged. So that's a lot of what we're teaching people, is how to hold space for all the categories of diversity.
There are so many variations in today's world between in-person, hybrid, virtual, size, culture. How do those factor in? Spend a little time on it. We can't cover them all. We only have an hour, but how does the facilitation approach change or not, depending on in-person versus virtual or hybrid or small or large?
I don't think it does, right? Because we teach five simple core things, right? And the metaphor we use often is, we can think about a project or a meeting or a task force I'm leading or a consulting engagement or even an agenda item on a meeting with the metaphor of a plane flight, right? We're all here in the Denver area, right? But, and I'm going down to Tucson, to go look at a possible home to buy. And there's three parts to that flight, right? Takeoff, which when we're sitting on the jetway at DIA and the engines hit, it's like 30 seconds the plane's in the air. That's where most meetings crash, on takeoff. Once the plane's in the air and we're flying or executing the project, the meeting, the task force, we generally stay in the air, although there are plane hijackers. We have to teach people how to handle those hijackers. And then again, the third point is bringing it in for a landing. And so if we hold that metaphor, it doesn't matter whether the meeting's face-to-face. It doesn't matter whether we're using, you know, Microsoft Teams or WebEx or, Zoom, right? The platform we're teaching people is independent, right? Whether it's hybrid, it does not matter. They need to learn how to take off well, handle the plane hijackers, how to hold space, how to land the plane, because people do a horrible job of closing meetings, right? And then we got to teach them how to design meetings, because most of the problems with meetings can be avoided by good design before we show up. And that's really, I don't think it matters what the platform is. And we used to run our program, right, face-to-face. Because back when you and I were starting, Andy, a big company had no problem flying, 30 people into Paris.
Yep.
And spending thousands of dollars. There were none of these platforms. And now we're doing the exact same thing that we used to do face-to-face. It's all virtual. We're really not running the face-to-face program anymore. Because most of my clients, as I'm sure yours, they're just not running face-to-face meetings, except as the exception. So I don't think it really matters.
Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, Evan, a little bit off topic there, but you touched on something that I think is really important. When I was in high school, I worked at an auto body shop, and I worked in the paint shop. And so I was always trying to soak up information because I wanted to paint my own car someday. But I would talk to the painter, how do you do this and how do you get it all perfect? And the answer was always, a good paint job is in the prep work. It's not in the application of the color. And so I look at meetings that way sometimes, or not sometimes, all the time, because I think that's where you make or break your meeting, is how you set things up. If you don't put the work in to design a good meeting, your chances of getting a good result are very, very slim.
I love it. That reminds me, so gosh, when was this? I took one of my first Lisa Atkins workshops, and it was either the facilitation or coaching agile teams. And she talked about exactly that, but not in the same metaphor of the body shop. She talked about the container as an open top box, fold them flat. There's the beginning, the prep work, so important, the actual meeting, and then the closing work. And I'm curious for both of you, how do you know if the prep work was good enough? What's your method for getting feedback? Was this meeting time a good investment, or was it crap? Because we're all practicing. None of us are perfect. Practice, practice, practice. Yep. But how do you find out if it was a good meeting or bad?
I'm going to defer to Evan, because closing is my weak spot.
Well, I think, first of all, managing time, we do a horrible job of it. We're not realistic about what can get done in an hour meeting. We jam-pack the meeting with more agenda items that are ever going to happen, which means we have to steamroll through the group, and there's no time for conversation. And that's why we only hear from the hippos. And so if we're not managing time well, what a lot of people do, instead of landing the plane at the end of the meeting, they keep talking faster. And what happens is people drop off. It's like, I got a 3 o'clock, I got to go. And so in terms of feedback, what we always teach people in closing the meetings, there's really four steps, and it's all obvious. Nothing we're doing is rocket science. Number one, a lot of people use parking lots to be taking things offline and triaging issues that don't fit the purpose of today's meeting or the objectives of today's meeting, but it is relevant to the bigger project. So we got to close the parking lot. We had objectives for the meeting, and we don't always achieve them. So I got to come back to the objectives and say, all right, what did we get done? What didn't we get done? And then the third thing is, we better drop off those meetings crystal clear who's going to do what by when. Because, at a meeting level, we're building action plans. And then the feedback piece is, the continuous improvement piece, plus delta, after action reviews, things you would do after sprints, but we take it down to the meeting level, which what went well, And what do we want to take a look at? And I got to be ready as the leader of a meeting to get feedback from the group, because a lot of the dysfunctions in meetings is me not being very effective leading the group. But we always encourage continuous improvement plus deltas at the end of a meeting, because a project obviously is a chain of many meetings over time, and they better be getting better every single meeting. And so that's the way we teach people how to close the meeting.
How do you know if the data is accurate or people are just doing normative conformity? It was the boss's meeting. It was a 9 out of 10, damn it.
Well, I would say a couple things. If you really want true feedback, I would do it anonymously after the meeting, right? Because if we do it in the meeting, it's a little harder, unless the team is really, right, from a forming, storming, norming, performing standpoint, performing. And when we're at that stage, people are straight. Because when I used to do team buildings, a lot of what we were doing is teaching people how to give straight feedback to folks. And so I don't know that the data, it's hard to tell what the data is in terms of that. But I think the data at the end of the day is, did you achieve the objectives? And did the group buy in? And so I think the data really is, did we get the results we're seeking? And of course, when we go put them out there in the real world, well, there could be rework cycles, you know, because if we didn't, you know, come up with the best possible decision, we're going to have another meeting and have to come back at it. So I'm not the hugest data person, Andy. I'll leave that to you. You folks are out there doing a little more work at a little more rigorous level than I am.
Well, thanks. Well, speaking of managing time, we're coming up to the end of our time box. For either Mark or Evan, is there a topic you wanted to explore? Something I didn't ask about? Something you wanted to say before we wrap?
Mark, anything from your end?
Well, I think from my end, in watching, I don't know, tens of thousands of meetings over the course of my career, is I love what Evan teaches, and I think it's highly effective, but I would encourage people to do something, because chances are pretty good right now that your meetings suck. So whether or not you want to use Evan's model or some other model, take something on to get better, because it's really not fair for you to spend your company's money ineffectively. So that, I guess that's my parting shot.
Nice one. Hit the mark. Evan, tell us more about that workshop.
Yeah, we used to run it as the 3-day face-to-face training, and it's a boot camp. You know, I ran it for the Air Force a little before the pandemic. And, you know, the Air Force, you know, the military talks about wanting to put people under pressure, under stress, before they have to go out into combat. Now, the workshop's not that kind of boot camp, but people will get worked. Right. The virtual version now is a 4-day program run across 2 consecutive weeks, where module 1 and 2, and I just finished a program with an energy client, I actually started the first 2 modules and finished yesterday. I'm going to run the next 2 modules next Monday and Tuesday. But most of it is practice, right? The boot camp, the stress test, where people are getting videotaped. They're getting intensive feedback and coaching, because people learn through practice. Right? They do not learn through lecture. If we had a 4-day program where I was lecturing, I'm not that interesting. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like people need to be worked. They need to be pushed outside their comfort zone. And that's what we do in the program, is there's 2 practice labs, because I have so many clients today. They come in there, they're welcome to observe senior people on 4th day of our program to see what it is. And they come in, they're like, I love this. My people need this. Here's what I need, Evan. Send me 10 2-hour videos my people can watch at their computer, self-paced learning on how to do this. And I say, I'm not interested. I say, go find another consultant who's going to waste your time and money. Because if they're old enough, I'll be like, do you have kids who learn to drive? And they're like, yeah, of course. I say, would you have ever let your kids watch 10 videos on how to drive and hand them the car keys? You never would do this. But we want a quick fix, right? And the reality is people learn by doing. Exactly. And that's the program. It's just get your butt up here and now. But up there when they were face to face, now we're in the screen in these little tiles, and people got to get worked. And that's what we do. It is just a boot camp for practicing high stakes facilitation with senior people when your leadership reputation is on the line.
Sounds fascinating. What are the best ways for our listeners to get in touch with you to learn more and maybe even sign up.
Yeah, I mean, you can go to our website, which I assume you'll put in the show notes. It's a mouthful.
BarrySchwartzAssociates.com. We'll put the correct spelling into show notes.
Yeah, and put /virtual, because that's our broader consulting offering. And the honest truth, I'm getting older. Mostly, I'm teaching people how to do this and not really doing a ton of consulting anymore. And you can look on my LinkedIn page, right? I did a search. I was surprised. There are like 8 Evan Ungers. I thought my name was rather unique, but there must be a lot of, you know, Hungarian gypsies out there. And I know one of them was a doctor who one of my shrinks knew him. He was like, I know an Evan Unger, but I'll be that guy with the sort of shit eating grin with a blue shirt, and you can link to it from there. Yes. So, I'll be one of the older ones there.
Awesome. We'll put links to the show notes. Thanks again to my co-host Mark Story from Agile Velocity and our meeting fixer Evan Unger. And to you, our listening audience, if you enjoyed this episode, let us know through a review or rating, comments on that podcast platform of your choice. If you'd like to join the discussion and share your stories about good, horrible, and oh my god, nightmarish meetings, join our Discord server. There's an active community. See the show notes for a link. And finally, support from listeners just like you help us cover our hosting and podcast costs. For as little as pennies a day, you can get some cool Agile Uprising swag. Until next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out. And we're off the air. And now this is the best part of the show. I keep the recording going because I used to stop it, and it was like, damn, I wish we had the recording on because there's some good snippets in there.
Yeah, I like Evan as the meeting fixer. I'm just wondering if you are more akin to Mr. Wolf from Pulp Fiction or Mike from Breaking Bad.
That is a good question. I'd say maybe a little more Mike from Breaking Bad in terms of doing some behind-the-scenes work.
Yeah.
So that is a great metaphor.